Welcome back. Our guest this week is Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, who's working on the COVID pandemic. Our lead story, the governor's not ready to lock down the state. On the OTR panel, Stephen Henderson, Zoe Clark, and Zachary Gorchow sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganswroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to our Zoom edition of Off the Record, as we're pleased to join to the panel this morning Zoe Clark in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Stephen Henderson somewhere in Motown, and Zachary Gorchow in East Lansing, and down in Ann Arbor a little bit later on, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, author and former candidate for governor. So let's talk about the governor first. On Monday of this week, she said, hey, I got an idea, legislature. Instead of me telling you where to spend all this money, let's you and I sit down together in the room and do it together. Michigan taxpayers will love this. On the table, $3.9 billion from Washington for Michigan schools, $4.4 billion for local governments, including funds for public safety and other local needs, and another chunk, $5.7 billion for state government. For over a month, the governor has been singing the same old song to the Republican legislature, Let's Work Together, a song that has so far fallen on deaf ears.
So, Tim, you have heard the song, and I'm going to keep singing it because I want to get stuff done, and I want to find common ground, and I know we'll be stronger if we can do that. So let's turn it from a solo into a duet.
Normally, with $18 billion to spend, the governor would decide where each dollar would go and then ask lawmakers to pass it or change it. But the governor is now taking a different tack. She is outlining her values in broad terms and asking the two Republican leaders, Mike Shirkey and Jason Wentworth, to help her decide specific buckets for the money.
Get the politics out of this. I don't know if that is feasible. I think it is possible. I really do. And that's why instead of putting together a whole proposal, we wanted to set forth what our values are and invite the legislature to the table.
So no agreements have been made on anything.
Well, you know what, Tim, we've had a lot of conversations at this juncture.
But you know what they say about talk. What the governor needs is talk that will produce Republican votes for her values with the clock ticking away.
We don't have unlimited time here. Time is important. It is crucial that we get to work, and we're eager to do that.
So far, this trio has not been singing the same song. But with $18 billion riding on the outcome, maybe they can harmonize over this on behalf of Michigan residents. We'll see. So, Stephen, well, the governor wants to do a duet. Something a little different. What did you make of all that?
Well, you need a partner for a duet, right?
Absolutely.
It's still unclear that she has one here. I think, from a political standpoint, a strategic standpoint, this is really smart. I think if you're the governor, you want to make it clear that the obstacle to this money getting to classrooms and to the other places that need it is the Republican leadership in the legislature. You don't want to make it seem like it's your fault that this is not happening. And so pushing the ball into their court or giving them the mic for the duet, whatever analogy you want to reach for there, makes a lot of sense. I don't expect that it's necessarily going to work, but I think it will help people understand that the Republicans are the block here. At the same time, I think you can't help but be absolutely frustrated that this is still going on. It is billions and billions of dollars for a state that needs it so desperately in so many areas. And the idea that we can't come to an agreement, even about how to spend money that has been sent to us from the federal government, it's infuriating. I mean, it reinforces that we don't have competent leadership in that legislature right now.
All right, so Zachary, she laid that out on the table, and the response back was?
Sounded an awful lot like what we've heard the last few months from the legislature, which was, that's nice, we're working on a plan, and we're going to move ahead. So the question now is, will the Republicans yet again just decide we're going to ignore the governor and drop a spending package on her desk and basically force her to react to it? I feel like we're seeing, though, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, in terms of the way the governor has quite radically handled her response to the pandemic, radically changed how she's handled her response to the pandemic, as well as this very much like, you know, kind of let's all get together and talk on the budget, is she's recognizing, you know, this is what some, if you count the money the state has control over, which is for schools and the state itself, you know, $9-some billion. And this is a once in a, you know, century probably gift that she cannot afford to simply have dictated how it is spent. That she is, I think, trying to signal to the legislature, we can work together again. Let's work. Obviously, there's a lot of bad blood, but we have got to work together on this. We will see. She's got a House Appropriations Chair in Tom Albert, a Republican from Lowell, who seems like he would rather be run over by a truck than work with the governor. at least that's been his approach thus far. But she's got a Senate Appropriations Chair in Jim Stamos, the Republican from Midland, who I think would like to work a deal. And a lot of this messaging seems a little bit targeted at somebody like him.
Well, and to underscore that point, when we talked to Dave Masseron, the new budget director, recently, he basically said, without saying it, I'm putting words in his mouth, which is very dangerous, he does have a better working relationship with Mr. Stamos than he does with Mr. Albert. Remember, Zoe, he said on the show, I want to go hunting with Mr. Albert. I'm going to guess they have not been in the woods yet, and they may not get into the woods. Your reaction to the governor's latest overture coming in a side door rather than the front door?
Yeah, well, first, I don't want to sound a broken record, but I just want to put this in context, as Zach kind of alluded to. The amount of money that we are talking about here is insane. This is the most massive windfall that the state of Michigan will be getting from the federal government, like in decades and decades and decades and decades. So this idea that we could actually be fighting like we were a decade ago when we were talking about a $2 or $3, you know, billion-dollar budget deficit, and that we might see fights like that to spend upwards the equal amount of Michigan's general fund budget is just sort of bonkers when you think about. And so it's unfortunate that there couldn't be some kind of really amazing vision here, which is like, let's really look at the future of what Michigan could be, whether you want to talk about infrastructure, right? We had this awful dam break last year, or whether you want to talk about lead pipes throughout the entire state, or early childhood education. Like, there is actually the possibility of making massive change with this kind of money. And it is sort of heartbreaking, right, to see it go down the same path of previous conversations about budget deficits and things like that. I think it is very smart to try any single door that you can. And as Zach also alluded to, how fascinating just this week that for the first time we saw both Senate Majority Leader Shirky and the Speaker Wentworth praising the governor. Right now, this was about her COVID handling or lack thereof when it comes to restrictions. But we'll see if there couldn't be a further bit of a relationship. The governor also talking just this week on about her like of Speaker Wentworth, and that they've been able to talk about the fact that they both have daughters and some relationships there. I don't think we're seeing any warmth between her and Shirky still, but much like it was with Lee Chatfield, let's see if there's not two that can tango here and maybe a third man out, but figure something out.
Thank you for the segue into her second news conference this week, Stephen, which was basically, and I got a call the night before, somebody anxiously, oh, the governor's going to announce a lockdown tomorrow. I said, what governor are you talking about? Okay. certainly not the one in Michigan. What's going on in her head regarding what to do?
Yeah. So I had a conversation with Dr. Khaldun the day after that press conference, which I thought really reflected some of the frustration that I think they feel in the administration with the choices that they have, and the sense that of overwhelm, you know, from the numbers, which continue just to get worse and worse. I asked point blank whether, from a public health standpoint alone, whether new restrictions would be the smartest way to get control of this surge. And you could tell she didn't really want to answer that question because they said they aren't going to institute any new restrictions. But she did talk about how if you could have new restrictions and count on people to follow them, that it would be the best way. And I think what they're up against is an opposition in the legislature that has whipped up its supporters to believe that restrictions are about liberty and not public health. And you've got a fatigue factor among a lot of the rest of the population that would perhaps stymie any efforts to get new restrictions into place. And so they really are not in a great, they're not in a great position to be able to make better decisions about this or different decisions. But I think, and I don't think I'm talking out of school here, I think just from a public health perspective, what I detected from Dr. Khaldun was that new restrictions are the thing that are gonna get this under control as quickly as possible. The CDC director reflected that same thing, that same thinking this week when she spoke out about this as well.
Zachary, the governor, I think, has a messaging problem because up until now she has said, I'm being driven by the science. If Stephen is right and his analysis of Ms. Dr. Khaldun's statement is that science would dictate restrictions, how come we're not doing it?
Go back to the November, the fall wave. They were watching hospitalizations, the percentage of people testing positive, and the number of new cases. If you were to go by those metrics right now, you would just be, where are the new restrictions? It makes no sense. They've abandoned their own calculations here. Now, that said, there's one very big change since the previous two waves, and that, of course, is the vaccine.
Right.
There is a vaccine now. You heard that the governor say that time and time again last year when she was talking about the restrictions. She would say there is no vaccine, there is no treatment. Well, now there is a vaccine. And just this week, there appears to be a promising new therapeutic treatment as well. So they seem to be making the calculation now that the outcomes, meaning do people die or not, will not be as bad as they were in the previous two waves because so many people over the age of 50 have now been vaccinated. And those are the folks who are most vulnerable to death. Now, yes, the pace at which people are dying is not as bad as the second wave, but let's make no mistake about it. It is awful what is happening right now. I mean, we are at more than 40 people dying a day for the last couple of weeks. That's about the average we're at. That is up from about 14 a day when it bottomed out after the second wave in February. So a lot more people are dying right now. No, it is not more than 100 a day like it was last November, December, but it is really bad. The governor is getting pulled all different manner of ways here. You know, how many times did she say last year the restrictions worked? We flattened the curve. She touted that again and again, but she's not going there this time around. And I think she has concluded that they just won't, she wouldn't say this the other day, they just won't work this time. If she were to shut down the schools again, it would be a bad scene, to say the least. There would be a lot of very unhappy parents out there if that were to happen. If she were, she tried shutting down athletics and has just been getting buffeted by all these parents of student athletes out there. They're not a majority of the voting public by any means, but they have made a lot of noise. There's been a lot of legal cases over that. She could try shutting down restaurants again. They've been down that road a couple times. It would be ugly. There's a lot of people out of work in the hospitality sector because of what's happened. So like I think Stephen just said, there are really no good options right now.
The CDC people have basically said to the governor, the problem with your using the vaccine to get out of this surge is that it takes 6 weeks to get the vaccine working. It's not shot and arm surge over. And so that's the other thing that she's butting up against, which gets us into our guest who is with us today, who is watching this subject, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed. But first of all, he is an author and has a book, and and I'm feeling like Johnny Carson here on the Late Night Show. Hawk away your book there, Doc. Tell us about it. What was the message that you want the people to take away from your book, sir?
Yeah, if you zoom out from this pandemic, it showed us a lot about our society. One of the systems that failed worst of all was our healthcare system. 15 million people lost healthcare because they lost a job in the midst of a pandemic. We watched our nurses and our doctors and our hospital workers trying to care for sick and dying people in garbage bags because of the profit motive focus of hospitals. 47 of those hospitals either went bankrupt or shut down. And we are watching yet again as we don't get a handle. We fail to get a handle on COVID-19 because we haven't invested in public health. And so, you know, the conversation about Medicare for All, folks know from a series of Democratic primaries and in Michigan, including my own. We wanted to take this out of the political context and put it back into the kitchen table conversations that people have about our healthcare system in the context of this pandemic, so that folks are asking, why is our system broken? How do we fix it? And what do we need to do now? And we think that Medicare for All is a real approach to that. So I hope folks will check it out.
So, Doctor, if you were governor today, would you shut the state down?
There's no question. If you look at where the science is and has been, we have been the country's leader in B.1.1.7, which we know is more transmissible, and there's evidence to suggest is also more deadly. We're watching as hospitalizations spike. The CDC itself has suggested that we ought to shut things down, and we know that shutdowns in the past have been successful, whether it was in the spring or in the fall, in November. This is a responsibility. Part of that is also the fact that I've really admired Governor Whitmer's leadership. I think that she stood tall when it came to taking on the pandemic in the spring, in the fall. And part of the frustration is, after having shut down in the past, the fact that she's not shutting down now sends a message to folks that this one's just not as serious by contrast to the other two. If you shut down back then, why aren't you shutting down now if it is so serious? So it undercuts any message that says people should be prudent and thoughtful and safe and stay away from these kinds of establishments, whether it's eat-in dining or casinos or gyms or indoor sports, because it's been done in the past. And so I just think there is a lot of scientific evidence suggesting that that's what we need right now. Hospitalizations, deaths keep spiking. 45 people die a day on average over the past 7 days. It is the right thing to do. It has been the right thing to do. And every day we fail to do it, this problem doesn't just get linearly worse. It gets exponentially worse. That's the nature of viral spread.
Zoe.
Sure. And I think this is absolutely what most folks are talking about, right? And what the governor is saying simply is that it is not policy, it is compliance. I'm curious to you, is this more of just a societal problem, right, doctor? Like, is this just that there is going to, no matter what, be 40% or 45% of folks who just believe that this is politics, that this isn't public health, and that simply this isn't going to be able to reach them in terms of that messaging? How do you get that group then to believe and to take this seriously without restrictions? What would you do?
You know, I hear that, Zoe. And I might start with just a 2-week pause and say, listen, I get how frustrated everyone is, but the spring is beautiful in Michigan, and this is the time to eat outdoors if you were going to eat indoors anyway. I hear that folks are frustrated not playing high school sports. I played high school sports, one of the most important things I did in my youth. So let's put a 2-week pause to make sure that when we do it, it's safe. We know that we have a really transmissible version of the virus. And I get that people are tired. I'm tired of this. I want to be going about my life like it was 2019, but it's not. And I want to know that when I finally get back to my life as I knew it, that I don't have to look over my shoulder and think about whether or not that's going to get me sick, someone I love sick, or someone in my community sick. At the end of the day, right, the way that we deal with the narrative that says that COVID is not real, that masks are not important, that vaccines aren't important, isn't to capitulate to it. It's to call it out and ask why it is that folks don't believe these things in the face of clear evidence. And, you know, when you're getting plaudits from the Republican Senate leader who has denied this pandemic and its seriousness from the jump, you got to ask yourself whether or not you're doing the right thing.
Stephen.
Yeah, Abdul, I wonder what you make of the difficulty we're having, especially in the city of Detroit, getting vaccines going. Mayor Duggan talked this week about what the rate is here. I was surprised to learn that it's 24%, which means 3 of every 4 Detroiters still does not have a vaccination. And of course, we've done this great job with making them available to people in the city. I mean, you can call and get one the next day. What are we doing wrong? And how do we get more people to believe that, look, this is the path to normalcy, to get more people who are vaccinated?
Yeah, Stephen, I really appreciate the question. First, I've got to give credit where credit is due. I think Duggan administration and leadership in Detroit has done everything they can around this pandemic, and evidence suggests that their actions really have been critical, and I'm really grateful for that. At the same time, the decision to make to get a vaccine, we sometimes think about as this broad phenomenon, but one person has to decide at one point to get the vaccine, and the vaccine has to be available there for them. We know that the biggest challenge to delivering public health in a community like Detroit, because of systemic racism and the poverty that it creates, is the last mile problem. And so you can offer vaccines in places like Ford Field, at places like the TCF Center, but we all know that that's not really where people actually live, and we got to get them out to people's doorstep. And so what I'd like to see, right, and this is a big lift, right, is more focus on taking on the vaccine hesitancy that leaves people saying, no, maybe not today, through investments in relationships with people who are trusted in the community, whether that's a block club captain or a local pastor. And thinking about addressing that last mile problem by putting vaccines on wheels and getting them out into people's communities at the point, right? So they can call a hotline and that thing's going to be delivered to their door. There's going to be somebody who's going to be ready to put that in their arm, and that we don't have to worry about the transit challenges, the time constraints that so many Detroiters face. And look, they're doing a great job. I know that these programs exist. We just have to take them to scale. And that is in part a funds problem, but also that is a time problem. You know, we're talking about a vaccine that's only ever really existed for a couple of months, and a virus that's only ever really existed for a little bit more than a year. And there has to be sort of a relationship with this thing. And as people see their neighbors and their loved ones having gotten vaccinated and feeling just fine afterwards and having that newfound freedom, I think you're going to start seeing more and more people choosing to do that thing. Let's just make sure that they've got a vaccine at their doorstep when that is the case.
Zachary, we've got about 3 minutes left. We are going to do an overtime. So, Zach, go ahead.
So, Dr. Abdul-Sayed, can you say, in terms of the enforcement piece, that seems to be the big hesitancy to try to do another round of big restrictions here, that if the governor were to, you know, shut down, you know, restaurants and bars and close the schools and, you know, suspend school athletics and really, you know, really tighten things up, kind of like last spring, the people are not going to be compliant as they were for the most part last spring and even into the fall, that people are just going to continue to do whatever, that restaurants will open, people, you know, hair will be cut, athletics will be played, maybe not on the official school level, and that not only will you have still spread of the virus ongoing because these activities are happening, but then as the governor, you've issued these restrictions that aren't really accomplishing the goal. Is that a legitimate concern?
I hear that. It is a legitimate concern, and I think you have to design around that. I actually think that it should be a very, very short pause. I'm talking about 2 or 3 weeks. And I think that it should be done in a manner where enforcement is consistent, but light-handed, right? We're not talking about fines and jail time about these things. We're talking about a very annoying but real fine to someone who, you know, is opening up their restaurant for eat-in. The other thing that has changed that I hope that we can account for is that we're dealing with a very different financial circumstance than we were even in November. At this point, we've had 2 tranches of federal COVID relief. You know, I know that the legislature and the governor can't get together about how we're going to spend it, but the money is there, and the ability to keep these businesses whole even through this last pause exists. And so my sense is that it's got to be light touch, but it's got to be consistent. You got to focus on the business operators rather than the individuals themselves. And you've got to make it time delimited and say, look, we're going to do this for 2 or 3 weeks. I get that people are sick of this, but it is the right thing to do is to stop the spread of this even more contagious variant of this virus. The question is, though, what's the alternative? You know, we've had all of this sort of consternation and lack of action, and the virus just keeps spreading at an exponential level. We don't really have another choice except for we have an obvious tool to be used. And if people tell me, well, the tool is not going to work, my point would be like, all right, try it. The only thing we can do now is try it because it's the tool that's worked in the past. And we have nothing else, right? Vaccines are not going to be here in time. And I know, right, that has been the push to get more vaccinations in arms, but they're not going to accomplish the problem in time. I want to just speak to one scientific fact here. There is an approach called ring vaccination, which we used for things like smallpox. The problem with smallpox is that from the day you're exposed to smallpox, the day that you actually get symptoms, you've got 14 days within which a vaccine can actually work to protect you. That's not the case with COVID-19. You get 5 days from the time of exposure to the time of illness. And in those 5 days, right, you're not going to be able to vaccinate someone because it takes 10 days to produce the antibodies. The timing just doesn't work out, and it's going to take too long. And so that is not a viable approach. The only viable approach here is a lockdown.
Doc, hang on. We're going to do some closed credits. We'll come back with some OT with the good doctor and our great panelist. Watch these credits and go to WKAR.org for more of our conversation. See you there.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.